Hey everybody, welcome to season 3, episode 16 already of The Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Dara McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. Dara, we're watching kind of the World Cup. We're recording this towards the end of the Netherlands-Senegal game and before the Wales-US game.
It was good watching England, yeah, it was good. They were good.
Yeah. Did they surprise you?
My missus, when I got up, she was like, the team's been named, and I guess the team. And you always know his favourites with Mason Mount. You know, you just know who's going to be in his team. Probably the only one there would have been, you know, do you get Foden in the team?
Right.
I'm a big Foden fan. They're good. I mean, you know, put Southgate to the side. That's a squad just like wrapped in talent. Yeah, okay, you could argue centre back maybe is the weakest position, but, you know, one's a 60 million quid defender, the other one's an 86 million pound defender. You know, they're good. They've got. I actually thought it was a game where you could play a Trent Alexander-Arnold if you wanted to rest Trippier. You know, to you're not going to worry too much defensively and, you know, could create goals. But Saka was good. Yeah, they were impressive, you know. Look, Iran, you know, you knew they wanted a 0-0.
Yeah.
It was good. Listen, anytime a World Cup or a Euros are on, you know, you get into it and you're watching the games and it's something to watch every day. It's weird in November having games like that to watch, but... you know, is what it is. But, look fine to me that the officials did a good job. Obviously, you know, a lot of injury times to the goalkeeper.
What was all that about? I understand for the keeper, but the second half when there were 10 minutes.
Yeah, if you watch the replay, I mean, how he even stayed on the pitch. I mean, that was a brutal, like, headbutt. You know, he should have been straight away, like the NFL concussion protocol.
I was going to say, should there be protocols that would stop him from making the decision, because ultimately he made the decision that he wanted to stay.
You need an independent doctor who's what, like the NFL have them in the crowd independently, and then they buzz down and tell the officials take such and such out of the game. They can see from a distance, they know the signs, and that could have been catastrophic. I mean, it was a terrible headbutt, and not only him, but the guy he actually headbutted, there was two of them, just went, but it was good. It was, the only thing I disliked, the American commentary is just fucking. It's like, well, I don't know if you feel the same, but it's like watching paint dry or listening to paint dry. It's painful.
It's like anyone who complains about the BBC or ITV coverage want to come and listen to the US coverage.
Yeah, give me, you know, Micah, Roy Keane, Alan Shearer, day of the week. Forget about Gary Lineker, but give me, like, you know, the ones you enjoy listening to. Even like BN Sports in Dubai or in you know, the UAE, they've got Neville. I think they've got John Terry. They've got two big hitters out there with Graham Keyes. So, Mrs. had like BBC iPlayer on, so she was listening to the commentary from that. You know, because the Americans, it's just even the in-game commentary, it's just like. Oh,
yeah, I try and go with 5 Live at least up to the build-up and to the kickoff, and then you can't really sync it with. I tried VPN yesterday.
It's painful over here. I don't know if people know. I mean, they get a few expatriates over to do it, but they ain't bringing their best. You know, and with all due respect to the Yanks who do it, whatever, and I get it's their team playing later, fine, but like. You know, there's enough ex-pundits out there, even the ones that Sky got rid of because they were like deemed dinosaurs. Bring them back.
Yep.
Bring Merson, Letizia, you know, some of the other, Charlie Nicholas, get them over there, you know, for like, you know, to work for you. They'd be better, you know, than what we're listening to. So, yeah, not good.
So we got, and of course we'll have played by the time this comes out, but there's Wales versus USA later. As somebody living in the US, what is your perspective on kind of following the US team?
Well, a pal of mine's on the coaching staff, Anthony Hudson, English coach. Coaches obviously the youngsters in the US, and he's gone with the team. So I'm messaging with him while he's out there. So, you know, if there's ever a team I have to be for, it's the USA, right? I mean, you know, obviously everyone in my house with England this morning, and so was I, because you want, you know, and I'd usually be Wales if it wasn't they were playing the USA. So it's funny, when I watch the Ryder Cup now, my loyalties tend to move a bit.
Really?
Even though I've always been Team Europe.
It's funny, I'm like the opposite. So, you know, I feel as though I'm even more embedded in, you know, wanting the Europeans to do well at the Ryder Cup. Or I don't know why, you know, why that happened.
You're a citizen. You've got a US passport, right?
Yeah, I'm fully signed up.
Yes, you should be for the USA. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope immigration's not listening to our podcast. Maybe rescinding your passport.
I know, right?
I don't know, you know, you want your British teams to win. There's only about two. So you want America to do well. So it's really, for us, it's difficult. Only two are getting out of the group. So, you know, I do think the USA will win that game 2-1. There's my prediction, you know. So, what do you think?
Well, I'll be cheering on the Welsh. I don't really know how good or otherwise the US team is. I mean, they kind of struggled through qualifying.
They did.
More than they usually do.
They do say it's their golden generation of young players, don't they? So, you know, with the US team. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens.
The US is definitely starting to get the benefits of the investment that they're putting in the youth systems. And so providing pathways. So historically, for in the US, football, you know, has always been really popular, but then everybody grows out of it. They go to college, they go and choose a different sport because there weren't really the pathways. Now there's the pathways there. They are doing a good job of nurturing a lot of that talent that would ordinarily have gone to American football, or they'd have gone something else, you know, rather than following a football path.
There's no doubt it's becoming more and more popular as a sport. I mean, it's, you know, I invested in a clothing business for football strips, and they do golf attire and stuff like that. We had a meeting the other day with someone here who represents a lot of the youth camps and youth, you know, to do their strips and stuff. And it is growing. I mean, there were parents here paying $6,000 to $8,000 a year, you know, for kids to go to these camps. A friend of mine wants me to invest in one in California and make it posh affiliated. You know what I mean? So it's on the rise as a top five sport. You know, it will surpass one of the big four very soon. So no doubt in my mind. And with 2026 on the horizon, you know, by then, you know, you've just seen, I don't know if people realize, Apple have spent $3 billion on Apple Plus, MLS. You know, those TV deals, if they can finally implement the pyramid system, which actually goes against, I believe, FIFA rules, if they can finally implement the pyramid system in the States and really get it interesting and stop shit teams making the playoffs that don't deserve it, put a proper pyramid in place, a proper structure, stop trying to make it like the Super Bowl, you will get a lot more eyes on it. And, you know, the game will grow. Because with what, 300, 400 million people living here, you can't grow and be better. So the US women's team dominated for a long time. There's no reason the men's team, with the dirt, the talent, the population here, the next 20 years, you could see America winning a World Cup. You really could.
Yeah, and you know, where 94 was the coming out of the US as a football, as a wannabe footballing nation, you know, then 2026 is, you know, I think that they've made it. The league didn't even exist the last time that the World Cup was here.
No, but by 2026, with Apple now and everything else in the cup, it will get better. If they crack the pyramid, it'll be off the charts. People from all over the world will watch it. The standard will rise. That's what's really... Is the final in 26 at the Sofitel, the $5 billion stadium in California?
I believe it's in LA, yeah. I think it's that one.
It's got to be in that stadium.
Yeah.
That's like the greatest stadium in the world. I mean, what a showcase that. But I think America will put a great World Cup on.
Yeah, and the fact is they don't need to really invest in facilities either.
Correct. They've got now the arenas. They've got even the women's in LA. They've got like a phenomenal stadium. Do you know what I mean? Like they have stadia now across America that's like second to none for that. So I think it'll be just nice after two World Cups with so much controversy to get back to a World Cup that's just about football.
So what's your take? Well, I think I already know what your take is, but I mean, this morning we had the armband business. Yesterday was, you know, the opening ceremony and the BBC perspective of it versus the Fox perspective, which in Fox here in the States, the broadcast is basically sponsored by Qatar. And so there's no reference or mention whatsoever to anything other than the football, whereas the BBC is... you know, taking a different approach.
Fox showed the opening ceremony. They actually showed the ceremony and did an 8-minute virtual signaling like promo on everything else.
They had 10 minutes of the head of the Qatari tourist board talking about how wonderful Qatar was before the opening ceremony.
I mean, no one's giving them a fair shake. And look, you know, I can't comment on other people's religion. I can't comment on other people's laws. Do I agree with them? No, you know, but... at the end of the day, I said this last week, this was set in stone 12 years ago, just like Russia was. The level of virtue signaling going on is off the charts. And what I don't understand is, I'm old enough to remember Beijing Winter Olympics 2 years ago. Was that 2 years ago?
Yeah, and summer was 2008, was it? Summer Olympics wasn't that long ago.
Do you remember any mention of the Uyghurs, the slavery that goes on in China? Do you remember any of these big publications, you know, whether it be, I don't know who you want to call out, who are owned by big newspaper groups that actually take loads of advertising money from China, who actually spent a lot of time writing about Beijing and the Winter Olympics, but there was none of this. I don't know if BBC did a whole build-up on Beijing and the Uyghurs and the cruelty and the rape and the horrific stuff that goes on in China. I don't know if any of that was covered by the BBC, by the press. Again, it's like pick your poison, is it? I don't know. I don't know why, you know, it's like I said last week about Iran, you know, the stuff going on, horrifying, you know, stuff, you know, I can say it's all horrifying, But at the end of the day, I'll be consistent about that, whether it's China, whether it's Qatar, whether it be Iran. These are horrific events in our lifetime that shouldn't happen in the 21st century. But people seem to pick and choose what they want to go at. All I've seen this week is, yes, is the armband stuff, the, what was it, yeah, you know, how bad the fan stuff is. It's just negative. It's just a negative blanket coverage the whole time. So I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what I can do to make a difference. I'm seeing people tweeting about turning their TV off in protest. Like, oh, how brave of you. You're so brave. You're so brave. Like, what a stand. Like, one less person out of 2 billion people on the planet watching. You're brave. Brilliant. Well done. Well done, you. But you've waited till the day it starts. Didn't see anything in the build-up. Same people who tweet and mention all this and probably try to do business in those countries, would take money from those countries. So I'm just one of those people that, you know, call it what it is. And someone said that, I think someone said, was on a social media, that I agree it should be there. I never agreed it should have been in Qatar. I never agreed it should have been in Russia. There's lots of countries it shouldn't be in, you know, until human rights is a serious issue and a serious, and there's a solution. And there is no more abuse and there is no more banning homosexuality. I mean, you know, we're not living in the 17th century here. We're not burning women as witches, are we, in the streets? I mean, the none of that stuff should go on in the world. So do I think we should be awarding massive events with billions in revenue and eyes in the world until those people have got their house in order? No. But when it's done, it's not for me to turn around and go, well, how dare you? And I'm not watching at a protest. It's not going to make any difference. The English players and every player were put in a really bad position again because of the armband. And then FIFA intervened. And the guy runs FIFA, the stuff he said the other day. I mean, it's just like, this is what we're dealing with. But then again, he's running unopposed. Nobody's opposing him for like being president. I mean,
he's a true representative of FIFA when no one's going to run opposed to him, what he says.
You know, what? My God, the corruption and the stuff going on over the years that hasn't been. We thought we got over it with Blatter, you know, and then I'm just like, I'm looking at it just like pulling my hair out going, what the hell? So look, what have the England team done? They're taking a knee. They're within the right. Fair enough. They've done that, you know, all along. That's been their stand. They wanted to wear the armband. They got banned. They could, you know, I think some teams are getting criticized for not being brave enough, but I read today, it wasn't a yellow card. They could have been banned from the game.
Right.
That's not fair either. And you're putting pressure on a player to get booked and then spend 90 minutes worrying with a Brazilian ref today. Right. I think sent 15 players off in like one game. So again, we're putting young people in a very, very difficult position. They're doing their best, but at the same time, they're employed to do a job. You know, they're representing their country. A nation could have really gone the full, I said this before and just said, we're not going to the World Cup. About a year ago, when the qualifiers were all finished, maybe 7-8 of the biggest nations turning around and going to FIFA. We're not going. We're not going. Change it to America. Change it to Australia. Hell, England and Ireland and Wales and Scotland are set up for it. Put it there last minute. You could have had that last minute set up. Just turn around and go, we are not going. And if you'd had Germany, England, the big 5-6 countries, Belgium, Brazil, Argentina, South American countries probably wouldn't have joined in. But if you'd had 7-8 of the big boys, just turn around and go, put statements out on the same day that we are not going to the World Cup, then that would have been okay. That's full respect. Yeah, you are unilaterally deciding we are not going. What's FIFA going to do? Send in Fiji? Send in the Samoan Islands to play?
They'd try and sue the crap out of those associations, wouldn't they?
Fine. Good luck. You know, good luck. Like, fine. And look how you'd look. You know? So I'm not sure they would have. I think FIFA would have had to have a conversation with Qatar, hand back a lot of money, and move it somewhere else. So that's me. 12 months ago. That's bravery. That's basically putting it on the line and going, nope, not interested. You know, we've qualified. We want to play in a World Cup, but we're not playing there. So that's something that could have happened. That's something that didn't happen. The press maybe could have put pressure on that happening a year ago. They didn't. They've basically gone full on in on this now. So what BBC did is up to them, but I believe it's taxpayers' money. The BBC bought the rights to the World Cup. So people's tax money has been used for them to watch the ceremony and watch the opening. What they don't want is an 8-minute lecture from Gary Lineker and co, you know, and a lot of people who are probably like, no, I've tuned in. I want to watch it now. I've made the decision. Call me whatever you want, immoral. You know, at the end of the day, you're quite a lefty. You watch the World Cup. you know, there was no virtue signaling from you. You didn't, you know, take your football and go home and go on.
That's on my TV. I mean, I was supportive of the stance that Gary Lineker and the BBC and everything took to make it an issue. However, it's not going to stop me from watching the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think their stance achieved?
It's funny, you know, isn't it? Because when you look deeper, you know, we can throw stones from glass houses with a lot of things that the UK has done and, you know, Britain has done over the years. It is, I agree, kind of virtue signaling.
You can't be in support of an 8-minute monologue about it all whilst doing what we're doing. You know, we are all guilty. You know, we're all involved. That's the world we live in. So what do you do? What is the solution here? What is the fine solution? Are we going to spend the next 3 weeks just every day? It's the same thing. And it's, and when the World Cup's finished, what do you think, what changes are going to happen?
There'll be none.
Right. But if Qatar had the World Cup taken from them 12 months ago, and they really want to see that as revenue and an important thing to do, because eventually you run out of oil, you run out of resources, like Dubai had to build a city and had to get away from just being an oil state. You know, the only change that you affect is when you take something from someone.
Yeah, you'd have to create some leverage.
Correct. And you go, you know what? You're not getting any sporting events. Then all of a sudden, they have to look at the way they rule. They have to look at the rules. They have to look at what they do to homosexuals. They have to look at what they do to women. They have to look at all of those things in a vacuum and go, if we don't move into the 21st century, we're going to die and wither. That's how you make change. So, that, look, that's my opinion. You know me, I hate to get political. That's more your thing.
We won't even mention the midterms.
Oh, God. I knew you'd bring him up eventually. Are the return of your favorite president to Twitter?
You know, I don't mind that, because then he's just going to entertain and he'll sink his campaign even further.
Listen, I've given up on 2024. It's fine. We're stuck to 2028. It is what it is.
No, it's your man Ron will be the one that.
No chance. He needs
I think that Trump, he needs to stay out of it now. Trump's going to self-implode. And he's like, am I going to take the party with him or not?
He's handled it right. He didn't bite.
Yeah.
You know, Ron came from whatever. He's staying out of it. Listen, let Ron govern Florida. He's doing a great job. Let him do our state. I'm happy to be with him till 2028. So at the end of the day, no problem for me there. I don't want him running.
Trump will end up getting indicted. Ron will come in like a knight in shining armor for the Republicans and then run.
Listen, all the investigation stuff is just, you Dems never learn. What you should have done was backed off and let him run and you beat him. Now by trying to do what you're doing and investigations and da-da-da-da-da, which will lead to nowhere and the usual newspaper headlines and like Russia, 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 it'll all just be bullshit. And my opinion is just leave it alone. He'll lose. You don't need to go down that route and look like a Putin or you're investigating a presidential candidate. Because if Trump did that in reverse, you'd all be out up in arms.
Well, at least you're going to find out about what's on Hunter's laptop, finally.
I don't care. You know, like I said to you, you know, politics, whatever else, I'm perfectly happy having a great governor and not worrying about the rest of America and just focusing on Florida. So that's where we are.
So I would like to say it's segueing into a happy note, but I think both of us hated football on Saturday night. We were awful, but let's start with you.
I went completely, I didn't even look up Bradford's. I went completely like off football as a full time on Saturday. Well, probably after the first 10 minutes, I was like off football. Yeah, look, I'm not going to hammer the team. A lot of people were, it was my youngest daughter said to me, she's on social media. She's like, oh, geez, you're getting hammered on Twitter again, Dad. You know, I was like, honey, you have to have a hard skin. You know, you have to, you know, this is something you have to learn as you get older. You know, sticks and stones might break my bones, but it is what it is, you know. And I said, the sad thing is a lot of young people who do it, not the older people. And that's just the world we live in. But yeah, I mean, we're suffering. We're suffering. From a virus, we're suffering from, you know, we think it's flu. I don't know, I've only used the dreaded C word, you know, but we're suffering. There's no doubt about it. And please, I don't want headlines from anyone listening to this go, oh, Posh got COVID all over the camp, but we're suffering. You know, we had a lot of people go down before the Salford game. Was it we played Exeter, you know, from that point on, we lost more people, Clark Harris, Jack Taylor, three of the players played with very bad flu on Saturday. We're just like spent. Again, Bristol Rovers dominated us. Bristol Rovers deserved to win the game. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, they had one shot on goal, whatever. They deserved to win. they won every battle. They were better in all facets of the park. They didn't look like a team that were struggling in League One. They were very good. Kudos to them. If we'd equalized somehow, it would have been a theft. So I'm that guy. I always hold my hands up when we've been outplayed by the better team. We didn't have a wank in us. And that's not us. You know, the one thing about Grant's team is they do always have a wank in them. They might lose, they might whatever, they might shit the bed, but they fight, they run, they do whatever. We didn't have a wank in us. And again, we've lost more people today going into tomorrow's game. And, you know, what didn't help was having to play Salford on TV. Yes, we beat them comfortably. But if we'd won the first tie, we would have had a few days rest. So we just didn't have a wank in us. And basically, again, tomorrow, I think we've another 4 or 5 down for tomorrow's game against the Chelsea kids in the EFL last 32, the cup. I mean, it hasn't been kind to us either. I think it's going to be 6 out of 7 games away from home. And we're not talking about 30 miles down the road, a lot of these. We did 1,200 miles in 7 days with Exeter, Salford, and Bristol. So when you're already carrying your arses all over the place with illness and issues and bumps and grazes and whatever, trust me, it hurts. And then we lost Efron as well to a concussion in the game. He's out now for a period. And he's been our best player. He just can't get a break.
And you had a pretty ridiculous sending off with Ronnie Edwards too.
Stupid.
Which, you know, if anyone wants to go and watch it, it's like a classic, like his last man is a fantastic blocking tackle. And
There was 24 fouls in the game. 19 were given for Bristol Rovers. And I think 5 were given for us. What does a statistic like that say to you about the game? But I'm not going to get in the. Yeah, I mean we've appealed. We probably won't win the appeal. We've sent video footage which show overlapping defenders coming in as he's made the tackle. Jando Fuchs should have rugby tackled the guy before he even got there. Fuchs is usually great. He was out of it on Saturday, so there was like a myriad of issues and mistakes leading up to the red card. And I felt sorry for Ronnie. He's obviously taken it, you know. So yeah, so he misses. I think he misses the cup game. So frustrating. But we didn't have, I think we had one shot all game, and or 2 shots, and I was in the final kind of like 4 minutes down to 10 men. Look, the one thing you say about our lads is they don't give up. They didn't go under. They didn't give up. It was like, that was a day where I was actually fearing the game before the game. I actually could see 3-0 against us, knowing what was going on in the camp, and we were dragging our arses from Salford there. I was fearing the worst of them, honest with you. When I heard Clark Harris went down before the Salford game and he took medication, he was knocked out. How he even got to the bench on Saturday, and he's still struggling, you know. He's full of phlegm and whatever. So I'm hoping this is the bad side of it. We get it out of the way. The problem is with these kind of, everyone relates it back to away performances. But when you look at the vacuum, the games we've lost away from home, there's been 2 games we've been really awful away from home: Plymouth and Saturday. They're the 2 worst out of 10 away games. The rest we were either leading, we were in the games, we should have taken points, we should have won. They were the 2 worst probably. And we're hurting. So what do you do when you're hurting? You come together, you get through it, and you come out the other side. So somehow, we have to pull wins. We have to get a result tomorrow. We have to go to Shrewsbury in the Cup on Saturday, another tough away win, and we have to get a result. And we have to just kick on from there and hope everyone recuperates, hope Joe Ward finally gets his arse back out in the grass, because we need him. And, you know, I love him to bits, the boy, but I want him to bleed. You know, I want him to, like, really put it on the line. So, you know, he is missed by his teammates, the team. We need him out there. And, you know, he's been missing too long. So there's lots of that going on. Like I said to you, like, we've got Dan Butler. He's just, God bless him. He shouldn't be playing many games in a row. And, you know, Jack Taylor, it was another big miss, and I think he's missing again tomorrow. So it is what it is. Our front line was decimated, you know, for tomorrow. Look, that's football. What was your excuse for losing on Saturday?
We were our own worst enemy.
Who'd you lose to?
Northampton. So it was, you know, 3rd versus 4th. Set up, you know, 18,500. I'd take every game away from home right now. Because we just, we matched them the first, I don't know when it was they scored, 25, 26 minutes. And it looked like, you know, 2 good teams playing against each other. We had one of our centre-halves was injured, Romney Critchlow, who's really pivotal to playing out from the back and the passing style that we have. We put somebody else at the back there. We continued the passing style because that's what we are, but somebody who's a bit more of a clogger than a passer, to be honest.
Uncomfortable with the ball at feet.
Yeah. And now, while it wasn't his mistake for the goal, Richie Smallwood has been... had a couple of really bad games, not necessarily consecutively, but when he has a bad game, he has a bad game, and just couldn't find a man anywhere. We were playing amongst ourselves at the back, just gave it straight to them. Easy goal. 2 minutes later, it was 2-0, you know, and game's over. So it finished 3-1, and we were lucky at that. And the one was an injury time penalty.
And was that your place?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. It's just the problems with the tempo again. I think the way we set up away from is maybe it's set up better away from home.
With my manager at your place and I need yours away.
Right. Between the two of us, you know, we'll be winning the title.
Yeah. Bloody hell.
Because I don't think we've won at home since September. So it was it wasn't pretty. Because we had two really good away wins before that. We beat Sutton, we beat Mansfield. So then coming up, though, I mean, maybe this is a positive. We've got three away games on the spin. So we got Salford away in the Papa John's tomorrow. Then we got Leighton Orient and Gillingham as our next two away games.
Fancy like maximum, no?
Well, you know, Leighton Orient will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see whether Northampton and therefore, you know, the ones at the top of the table are just that much better than us, or whether it truly is a home versus away thing. We'll see how we do at Leighton Orient.
Well, how did they do on Saturday, Leighton Orient?
Let's have a look. I am not sure because, like you, I basically decided that football didn't exist. And it probably wasn't even, it was probably about 60 minutes. Leighton Orient 1-2-1 away at Stockport.
Shit, that's a good result, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a really, really good result.
Yeah. So, but you know, you just never know because the talent is there. I'm pretty convinced the talent is there, but for whatever reason, we're just not able to make it happen at home.
How did you feel before the game?
I was excited. I was like, okay, this is a chance. You know, someone is going to get on the end of a hiding, and maybe this is the day for it to happen and to show everyone.
I felt the opposite.
Yeah.
I was feeling like that. I love that old school feeling of we're going to demolish every team we play. And I just didn't feel it on Saturday. You know, whether it was a mixture of the injuries, the issues, the, you know, the away stuff, you know, you don't want to make a thing about the away stuff, but I just felt, yeah, you know, it's like, I said it to my missus in the kitchen, she made me coffee. I was like, it's going to be one of them days, I feel it. And when it started, every 50-50 was won by them. You know, to be fair to the manager, he covered for the players after the game and said it was tight, it was this, it was that, but I know why he did that. You know, the players were licking their wounds. They were.
Yeah. They don't need somebody else having a go at them.
No, sometimes you need to like give them a pass, you know, and okay. I mean, look, Bristol, to be fair, they dominated, but I think they had two chances all game, but they did dominate us. And I don't know what the hell they're doing struggling because they were a good team, you know, but they were a good team last year late in the season. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them rising. You know, the decent squad, decent players, good front two. You know, they've got a midfield that's physical, a midfield that's talented. Some good teams.
And they've got it. I mean, it's a good atmosphere there, isn't it, for a relatively small stadium?
Listen, let me tell you right now, the fans there influence officials. Without a doubt in my mind, which I, you know, you love to see if it's your team, you know, but there's no doubt about it. Like every time you had a throw in, you were getting sent back 5 yards. You know, it was just little things. And yeah, I've been a couple of times. I like the atmosphere there. It's quite good. But that was a sore one on Saturday. So I'm hoping you win tomorrow, get through Saturday. I don't know if we have a week next week off, you know, no midweek. We need a week with no midweek games. So to get into December and really go again. And we're running out of chances here to be losing two games in a row in the league because it's getting so far now. Not that I table watch, but you hear it on the commentary. You know, you can see the teams above you winning. You know, the margin for error for us now is like it's pretty much nothing. So there's no more shitting the bed, you know, and losing 1-2 in a row. You know, it has to be win 5, lose 1, if that. You know, it needs to be like that. So the players really need to now come again, get fit, you know, and go on a proper run. Not run like last time where I think we won, was it 6-8 or 5-7 in the league. We're going to need to go on a run where we win, maybe even break a record from before, if we're going to give ourselves a chance. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and it's kind of a funny table. So you're fourth in the table still, but then 10 points from second. You know, there's such a gap that's forming from the top three and everybody else.
You're in a good shape. You know, listen, you lost on Saturday, bad results. But the one thing I'm noticing you're not doing at Bradford is losing two in a row or three in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good habit. We have a bad habit at the moment, like when we lost six in a row early in the season. And, you know, we tend to follow a loss up with another loss, and we have to stop that. That's a really shit habit to get into. So we have to, like, yeah, great winning the cup tomorrow, great winning the cup on Saturday, but winning the next league game is important. I think Barnsley, whenever we play, we have to win. You know, we have to, like, put a few wins together and stop with the lose-lose, because that's just derailing us, you know? And we have to get a bit luckier, because we've been just too unlucky with injuries, we've been too unlucky with illness, we've been too, you know, got to make your own luck, I guess. So, here's what it is. On another note, just want to say to all my staff and people and whatever listening, that we've done this 30-day November challenge with Just Giving. The target was to raise 10 grand. We've smashed that so far. Anyone out there feels like donating? I've done it 21 days in a row, 9 days left. It's absolutely killing me. My hips and my knees are I'm on my
knees. You're not a runner, are you?
I'm not a runner. So I'm being brought to places I've never been before. This is incredible, as I'd say to my missus. This is incredible. Like, I mean, I did it after the England game today. I went out and I did it. It was like, okay, go out and get it done, my 3K. You know, yesterday I broke my personal best. I'm not going fast. I see everyone else's times on Strava and I'm last of the pack. But in fairness, they're all ex-players. My staff are like 10 years, 15 years younger. I'm a guy who doesn't run. I do smoke. You know, so there's all those things, you know, but I am putting a shift in, and you don't want to let the team down. That's why you all sign up to do it together. And to be fair, like, we've got the ex-Hull owner's son who used to run Hull for Grant. He's in the group. You know, there's quite a few. It's not just posh people, and they're all putting a shift in and raising money. So, you know, massive credit to them. Obviously, it's for prostate cancer, you know, which is very important for the awareness. So I forget what the actual page is, but if you go look me up and Just Giving, 10 quid, 5 quid, anything would be great to people listening out there. So all good.
I think it was Phil Adlam that I saw at the very beginning saying that he'd never ran before, and that just the thought of it terrified him. And I responded that it's going to get easier. And I think he thought that, you know, that's easy for you to say.
He ripped his calf. He ripped his calf the other night, and he still went out and he walked the next day, and he did his, I mean, fair play. I mean, you know, seeing the guys digging in and doing what they got to do, I'm very proud of them. So now it's been a real concern. You know, the manager, of course, keeps up on the challenges. I think he wants him and the staff to do 10K a day for the last 10 days. I'm just like, fuck. I mean, I'm crawling after three. I can't even run the full three. I'm not going to lie. I have to take like a couple of seconds break and then go again. I mean, I must look like an old dude, like, you know, running around. It's just like, oh. God. Anyway.
Fortunately, there's no paparazzi following you around.
No. So, yeah, so posh Bradford, shit weekend, World Cup, a lot of virtue signaling. What are we moving on to?
You know, there's only a couple of things I really have on the list. One of them is Coventry City.
Yes.
So we have Mike Ashley bought the stadium, and then Doug King bought 85% of the club, with I think Sisu still opening 15%.
Yeah, saw that.
Why would Mike Ashley buy the stadium and not the club?
Because Mike Ashley makes money. You know, and if I'd had 17 million lying around like spare change, 17 million to Mike Ashley would be like 10 grand to me. So I would imagine he's buying it because he knows he can make a profit. It's worth a lot more than 17 million. So he's obviously come up with the cash. That stadium's worth 30 million. It's the Ricoh Arena, right? Or whatever it's called now. So Ashley's bought it on purpose, probably thought about buying the club, probably heard someone was buying the club. So he's like, you know what? I'll buy it for 17 mil. We have concerts there. I can control it.
I know I'm going to get my rent because somebody else is coming in and buying the club.
He's going to get rent off Coventry, and I believe Wasps, when they're taking over, play there. So he's probably going to earn, I don't know, 2 million a year in rent, the events. He's got an appreciation asset that's worth a lot more than 17 mil. He's paying the mortgage. You know, whether he did a mortgage pay, he probably paid cash, not Mike Ashley, hence why they did the deal. Yeah, I mean, you can criticize him, but he's a businessman. Anyone in business would do the same thing. Why he didn't buy it's beyond me. Magnificent club, magnificent opportunity there of a sleeping giant. They're up to 12th or 10th in the league. I told you they were going to climb. I did predict this weeks ago. They've got a top half squad. They got assets. You know, listen, Sisu got lucky a few years ago. They were like looking at losing 30, 40 million because of what Robbins has done. You know, they've probably got half of that, if not more, back. So they're in good shape.
Do you think Mark Robbins is underrated? Because you never hear him talked about when some of the, you know, the opportunities come up in the Premier League.
I think if Nathan Jones can get a job in the Premier League, I think Mark Robbins could get a job anywhere he wants. And that's not a slight on Nathan. You know, he's done brilliant at Luton and he got his chance at Stoke. But Mark Robbins, you know, I would say he's maybe, yes, he didn't get them to the playoffs like Nathan did with Luton, but with what he's worked with what he's had to do, you know, and the lack of being able to spend money and whatever else, like, fair play to Luton, they spend money. They spent a few million in the summer on strikers and stuff, but I don't know when was the last time Coventry spent $1 million or $2 million or $3 million. So I think, yes, he's the next one who deserves a shot at the title, but Coventry wouldn't want to lose him. I mean, he's done such a magnificent job for them that you'd be putting the biggest release clause in his contract and paying him a king's ransom to stay there. So I don't know anything about the new owner. He looks like he's got pockets. Who knows? But their fans deserve a bit of peace for a few years. I think that the up and down, that, you know, it's been great in the football side recently. It's been horrible off the pitch, having to move away, having to play Birmingham, coming back.
The fact that they've done so, what they've done on the football side of things, is even more of an amazing achievement given everything behind the scenes.
Adversity can bring everyone together. It can make it can focus minds. It can really, like, have the reverse effect on what you think it would. And they've taken that and they've run with it. And that's a testament to their staff, the manager, the fans, the players. They're together. So there might be a lot of dislike for the ownership, but there's a lot of love for the actual players, the staff, the manager. So that's a club that's done very well. They're only going that way. So it's a good buy. Whoever's bought it, and I don't know the man and whatever else, it's a very, very good buy. So just like the guy buying Bournemouth, you know, I think, you know, who's coming in, I think he's getting a really, really good football club. Bar the stadium is probably the biggest problem. You know, the infrastructure and everything around, it's a good football club.
What do you think the catchment area is for Bournemouth? Do you think that they're at there, because you talk about the stadium, but do you need a bigger stadium for a club like Bournemouth?
Well, I don't know. It was always the Wigan thing, that Wigan could never get, what, 20,000 when they were in the Premier League or whatever. I dare say if you had a better facility, because I haven't been to the stadium for a long time, Bournemouth, but by the looks of it, there's only so much you can do with, what, 10, 11, 12,000 capacity is. It would be interesting to see if they had a 20, 25,000 beautiful brand spanking new, you know, all-purpose built. Would it have that new stadium bump? Would they definitely with away fans, you'd be selling 8,000 tickets. So there's no reason to get 20,000. I guess proof's in the pudding. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know the location, the geography of what can be built, what can't be built. You know, is it limited where it is that they need to move away from there? Fascinating, really, anytime you see a Bournemouth or even a Luton getting to the Premier League with the capacity of a stadium, you know, in these days is madness, you know, in a good way.
Now, talking about Wigan, did you see about the manager? Like, are they going to, one, letting go of Liam Richardson, you know, for everything that he did to get them back on track? But then I saw that Yaya Toure rejected them, so they're going to Kolo Touré instead. And I haven't seen if they've actually appointed anyone, because that's probably 24 hours or so ago that I last saw that.
I think it's always very unfair. I remember seeing in the summer gone, they didn't sign anyone. And they'd obviously gone up. And that was a bit of an eye-opener. So I don't know what was going on there. It was quite a wealthy guy bought it, whether he's lost interest or not. But it's a real shame for the manager, because any manager who doesn't get backed in the transfer window, you think they get a bit more time, because they deserve it, really. They didn't get the backing.
Especially after the promotion.
Yeah, you're giving them League One tools, you know, in a championship. So it's difficult, you know. If you don't allow a manager to get 5, 6, 7, 8 players in, you know, they bring in one or two, you know, that's a really, really tough sell to then fire that manager, you know, like 3 months later or 4 months later, and you give them a new contract. I did look at it when I saw it come up. I was reading, it was The Athletic, and it came up suddenly. I was like, Jesus, that's a weird one. As for Toure, he's the brother that's at Leicester. He's coaching with Brendan Rodgers. So that'll be interesting. Seems to be a good coach. He's at Celtic with Brendan. He's gone to Leicester. He'd have picked up a lot of good habits from Brendan Rodgers. Mightn't be the worst one, might be a shrewd one. Not sure, are they good enough to be in the champ without a good window coming up? I don't know, you know. It's but hey, let's see. Good luck to him.
And finally, what about Rob Edwards at Luton? That one kind of surprised me that he got a championship club.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I thought Critchley would be in there. Maybe he's won too much money, maybe he's getting paid, you know, when he left Villa. You know, if he goes and gets another job, maybe it's in his contract, Villa stopped paying him, and, you know, Luton couldn't pay him the kind of money he was at. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, you know, Edwards was the number one choice. Look, good manager in League Two. Would have been interesting to see what he did with Forest Green in League One. Watford was definitely the wrong choice. If it was a good payday, good for you. If it wasn't, that was bad advice from an agent. But he's got a great club. He's got a great technical director in Mick Harford. He's got good owners, good fan base. Very good squad. Luton, from what I remember watching them play, you know, did love playing with full backs, you know, bombing on and whatever else, and changed a little bit over the last 18 months with maybe a little bit more direct. That'll be fascinating to see how that play out. I'm not sure the philosophy football-wise is the same as Nathan. So that'll be an interesting one.
Which is interesting because you would think that that's what they would want to match the most, because that's what's been, the system.
Could be wrong. I've saw Forest Green a few times. I've seen Luton, obviously, up close and personal. We played them. I could be wrong. You know, but it'll be interesting. I hope it goes well for, like I said, good club.
And I want to give, talking of good clubs, I want to give a shout out to Notts County. So Notts County got, I think, 16,500 in the National League at the weekend. Incredible attendance.
The Wrexham fan corrected me recently, saying I'd said Notts County were a bigger club.
Mm-hmm.
They were like having a go at me. I was just like, Notts County, like, you're saying 16,000?
Yeah, it was something like that. It was the third highest attendance of the day. Sheffield Wednesday, then ours, then Notts Counties.
Where are they in the league?
They are second, 1 point behind Wrexham.
That is going to be tight.
We lost 1 in 20, but 1 all season, and they're second.
He's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be heartbreaking, whoever finishes bridesmaid in that league. Like I said, should have been 2 automatically up, but that's... That's going to be fascinating. That's almost like, is it going to be decided with the next time they play each other? I mean, like, there is no margin for error in that league, you know, because both of those teams are just going to pretty much win 99% of the time. So, yeah, and I see Wrexham are on FA Cup TV again.
Are they?
I think every time I look at ESPN during the FA Cup, Wrexham are on. They must have made like £1 million in TV.
I can say another couple of £100,000, you know, every time they're on.
Like, the rich get richer.
It's amazing. I don't know if you find it. I find it here in work meetings and business meetings that I'm having, and I'll be talking about football, and everyone's heard of Wrexham now, even if they're not football fans. They're talking about Wrexham, and then, oh, I saw there was a game on ESPN that I watched.
In California, right? So you're probably, a lot of people that way are probably the adverts, the bus stops.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I haven't, you know, obviously our game was on ESPN the other day, thankfully, you know, for the TV game, but against Salford. But no, I mind you, I don't have as many friends as you, so I don't get to speak about Wrexham or whatever else. I mean, I had a guy delivered my daughter's new car the other day for her birthday, and he was like, yeah, I looked in the computer and I saw Peterborough. I used to live in Peterborough. I didn't realise you owned Peterborough United. He was kind of a fanboy, which is nice. You know, like, we were chatting, in the Australian guy who lived at Posh years ago, talking football and da-da-da-da-da. But yeah, no, not the Wrexham thing. But listen, the rich get richer. Ryan and Rob could do with the extra TV money, you know, whatever else. But listen, fair play.
You'll be proud of my youngest. He went out to play football in his posh kit the other day.
Yeah, that's what I like to see. Well, that's funny because my eldest son, he's 17, like next week. All his friends, I got merch, the hoodies.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it the same. So in our Windermere Prep, the school, private school up the road, there's like at least 20 kids rolling around with posh hoodies and merch. You know, so we're like representing out here in Orlando. Very important. Tell your son, top job.
He was doing the same.
I'm going to have to get him a couple. I'm going to have to get both of them a couple of hoodies, after Christmas. You know, it's great, the old hoodie merch. So, very important before you start littering them in Bradford stuff.
Oh, they've got everything Bradford imaginable, I think.
Are you going back for Christmas, or are you here for Christmas?
No, I'll be here for Christmas. So I'm not sure when I'm going to get to a game next.
Gotcha. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving, so I'm home alone.
Yeah, of course.
So the family have all gone up to Michigan. I had to stay here just because we have a dog that's not doing so well. And so I'll just be hanging out, working, watching some World Cup, and probably go to Epcot for a meal on Thanksgiving and just hang out there for a bit.
Are you sure?
Well, that's the plan at the moment.
You're at my place for a bit of a scoff. So honest invitation. We've got a lot of food going on. So if you want to pop around, not a problem at all. Like 3 onwards and whatever, we'll be eating a lot of food, a lot of dessert, and a few drinks. The games on in the background, and the NFL games are on, and the usual stuff. But I like Thanksgiving. It's kind of the build up to Christmas now. You know, the house littered and decks and fucking, you know, I got closed down into getting lights all around the fucking house. $5,000 that cost me. It was, I see your beloved Bob Iger is back at Disney.
I was very happy to see that. For folks listening, like, we've been both in California and in Florida. We've probably been to the Disney parks once almost a week for the last 10 years.
You're a big Disney.
They'd really been driven into the ground by the...
I have $100,000 worth of Disney shares that are worth like $52,000 or something at the moment because of that woke motherfucker that was there before.
Well, at least you got a nice 10% bump today, I think.
Is that what it went up?
They finally got rid of him, which, you know, I never wish ill on anybody, but I'm glad that he was he'd taken away the pixie dust, so to speak. So we'll see if Bob Iger, you know.
Let's get back to making normal kids movies, yeah? Let's leave all the shit out of them, you know what I mean? So I've seen some of their most recent releases, you know? Even the Marvel movies are starting to go woke, you know? And I'm just like, we went to see Wakanda Forever. It was like, find a male superhero in a movie. It's just all chicks. She-Hulk has now replaced the Hulk. I mean, there's no blokes left. I need a superhero now. I'm not having a go. I've got daughters. But it's just, it's too much. Everything's just too much.
Just for the sake of it.
Yeah, it is for the sake of it. You got the first transsexual superhero, the first this, the first that, the first whatever. It's like, okay, fine. But it's like they're force-feeding stuff on top of everyone. And it's kind of like Disney, you're going way OTT with this. Let's go back to statistics of 2%. There's your statistic. Yeah. You know, so anyway, enough of politics, enough of Disney.
Yeah, we've mixed it up a little bit today, haven't we?
People missed our COVID and politics chats, you know, from back in the day.
I do want to say thank you to everyone who voted for us in the Football Content Awards. We got silver in the best podcast for the Football League.
We got bronze last year.
We got bronze last year, yeah.
Silver this time and gold next year.
Yeah, I guess we need to pay a bit more money next year.
Somebody actually messaged me, a female lawyer, and said, you need to blow somebody at that award ceremony. I said, listen, you be sent in for that job, not me. You're absolutely correct, you know. Whatever it takes. You know, to win. You know what I'm like? Whatever it takes, you do whatever you got to do. But yeah, it was great. Listen,
momentum. We've got momentum.
Happy for Rob, for you, for everyone involved. So it's nice. Nice bit of recollect. You know, there was a lot of good podcasts up for those awards. So it was nice to see.
And, no, it's a big achievement, I think.
Massive achievement. So big, big thank you to everyone who voted for us. Love that.
All right. Well, let's go back to watching the World Cup and hoping that we have a little bit of a happier time watching our clubs this week. If anyone does have any questions, you find us in all the usual places, hardtruthfootball.com/contact or contact@hardtruthfootball.com.
And people, stop writing articles and posting my stuff out there, making me look like really bad. There's another one this week about me attacking the Liverpool owners, just as I said, about the midfield, you know, the money. And I wish people would stop taking like just a few lines, because it's like, come on. But you're killing me here. So again, anyone listening, don't pick the virtue signaling bit here and try and make me out to be a pariah. It's not fair. It's not who I am. You know, let's just keep it clean. Don't want to call the lawyers.
Let's take the support for the England team. That can be the bit you pick this week.
There you go. It's coming home. It's coming home. There you go. All right. Well, listen, guys, great podcast. We'll speak to you all soon.
Yeah, we'll do. Take care, everybody.